Okay, 1 Kings. This was possibly written by Jeremiah the prophet. We don't know for sure. By the way, the chart of the different kings of Israel and Judah after their split, and that's going to occur real quick here, on page 85 of your Talk Through the Bible books, but unfortunately they don't carry it through all the kings. I wish they did. I looked further. I didn't find one that went further, but you want to keep keep an eye on that every now and then. Probably between 646 and 560 B.C., 1st and 2nd Kings both. A lot of the argumentation that argues for that, though, is, you know, it's more of a Bible introduction type information and stuff. But it covers a time period of about 120 years from the start of Solomon's reign in 971 B.C. to the ending of Ahaziah's reign. He was a king of Israel in 851 B.C. So it was from 971 to 851 B.C., 120 years. This is important. You'll see this on a test. 1 and 2 Kings. 1 and 2 Kings present the political history of Israel and Judah. So 1 and 2 Kings is the political history of Israel and Judah, and it takes a prophetic view, the view of a prophet, condemning immorality and idolatry. And, you know, lo and behold, all the guys that we think wrote 1 and 2 Kings, Jeremiah, probably written by a prophet, Jeremiah. 1 and 2 Chronicles give the religious history, not of Israel and Judah, but just of Judah, focusing on the Davidic dynasty, the Davidic throne, the throne of David, and all those after him. And it focuses on the temple, so it's got a priestly focus. Okay? So keep that in mind, because they both cover, they overlap, they do cover a lot of the same incidents, but it's from a different perspective. Okay? The Davidic dynasty, or the Davidic throne, either way, same thing. Okay, the outline. I need to start my timer here. Outline of 1 Kings. Is the reign of King Solomon, which is the first 11 chapters. The outline of 1 Kings, chapters 1 to 11, is the reign of Solomon. Then the kingdom divides. The kingdom divides. That's chapters 12 to 16. And then Elijah the prophet, spell it right because he's got a buddy there with his name is spelled almost the same way. Elisha, then there's Elijah with a J, and Elisha with a SH. Okay? But Solomon, he reigns in chapters 1 to 11, David's son Solomon. The kingdom divides in chapters 12 to 16, and chapters 17 to 22 it focuses on Elijah the prophet. The reign of King Solomon is the third king of Israel. Remember, there was Saul, then David, now David's son Solomon. Third king of Israel. In chapter 1, Adonijah, one of David's sons, is aided by Joab. Here's the old commander Joab as he attempts to seize David's kingdom. Okay? Also, Abiathar the priest Abiathar the high priest sides with Joab, and the two of them try to get Adonijah, one of David's sons, to seize David's kingdom. But the elderly David, who's on his deathbed, anoints his son Solomon to be king. Now Solomon is just a little kid. This is chapter 1. Chapter 2, David gives some advice to Solomon. Let's take a look at that. Man, we got a lot of verses here. He tells Solomon to do the law of Moses, be obedient to the law of Moses, be strong, that God would bless him if he obeyed the laws, that he would bless his nation if he obeyed them. Now verses 5 and 6 of 1 Kings chapter 2, it says, David says, now you also know that Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, do you know what he did to me and what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner the son of Ner and to Amasa the son of Jether, whom he killed? He also shed the blood of war in peace. So even during peacetime he was killing innocent guys. And he put the blood of war on his belt, about his waist, and on his sandals, on his feet. And he says what he did to, remember what he did to these two guys that he killed, but also what he did to me. I think when he thought about that is the fact that he killed Absalom. David took that as a direct attack on himself. Verse 6, David, I think David probably, when the time came when he really knew, hey, this guy is way overdue, he needs to be put to death, there was a lot of guys that David should have put to death that he didn't, and it was probably because he knew that he deserved to die too. Because he committed adultery and murder, and the law has no sacrifices for adultery and murder. He's supposed to stone the guy to death. He was the king. Nobody was going to do it. Stone him to death, unless he ordered it, and he wasn't going to order it. But he was reluctant to kill people. But now verse 6, he says, so act according to your wisdom. This is what he tells Solomon. And do not let his gray hair go down to Sheol in peace. David is saying, little Solomon, this guy is going to tear you to pieces if you don't kill him. One of the first things you do when you take over rule, you do the one thing I didn't do. Kill Joab. Kill the thug, get him out of there. He's no good. And David also said, my commandos backed me. Joab couldn't knock me off. But this kid isn't going to stand a chance against Joab. Take him out. Take him out, Solomon. Verse 7, but show kindness to the sons of Barzillai, the Gilead, and let them be among those who eat at your table, for they assisted me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. So David is always faithful. Even after he's going to die, he's going to see to it that those who were faithful to him, that they would be blessed and all. Let's see, verse 22, and King Solomon answered and said to his mother, and why are you asking Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him also the kingdom, for he is my older brother, even for him, for Abiathar the priest, and for Joab the son of Zeruiah. So now, what happened was that Adonijah, now everybody knows David's the king, so they're backing David as the king, and his mother wanted to let a concubine of King David's, marry Adonijah, the guy who wanted the kingdom. And so Solomon's saying, look, you give him my father's concubine, and everybody's going to say, well, that gives him a right to the throne. I mean, if he's going to marry a concubine that was one of David's, that makes him, that seems to put him more on a par with David than Solomon. So right away, Solomon is saying, no, this is not going to go. And see verse 25, so King Solomon sent Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and he fell upon him so that he died. Adonai, he has his brother put to death. He realizes his brother is not going to submit to his reign. He's got to be put to death. And so he sends, this guy is an old man, by the way, by now, Benaiah, but he was one of David's mighty men. I think he was the same nut that killed a lion in a pit and then fought a 7.5 foot tall Egyptian, took the spear out of the guy's hand and killed the guy with his own spear. So this is a ruthless guy. And I think this is the guy that he sends later in this chapter to kill Joab. If there's anybody who could do it, it would be this guy. Yeah. He's probably just a little kid. He might be. I haven't figured it out. I'm sure there probably is a way of figuring it out, but I don't think he's like 3 or 4. But I mean, he's probably about, I don't know, maybe 12 or 13, something along those lines. I'm just guessing there. Verse 27. So Solomon dismissed Abiathar from being priest to the Lord in order to fulfill the word of the Lord which he had spoken concerning the house of Eli and Shiloh. That was, the house of Eli would be cursed because of the sins of Eli's sons. A little bit further, verse 31. And the king said to him, do as he has spoken and fall upon him and bury him, that you may remove from me and from my father's house the blood which Joab shed without cause. And he was talking to Benaiah to go and kill Joab. Verse 34, then Benaiah the son of Jehoiada went up and fell upon him and put him to death, and he was buried at his own house in the wilderness. And it's about time that Joab was put to death. And that's what occurred there. And verse 35, the king appointed Benaiah the son of Jehoiada over the army in his place. And the king appointed Zadok the priest in the place of Abiathar. So Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was one of David's mighty men who was loyal and all, and now kills Joab. He becomes the commander. And yet right away you see with Solomon one aspect that David didn't have. And that is that Solomon recognized that to keep political power, sometimes you got to kill your enemies. David was kind of gun-shy on a lot of this stuff, but Solomon was more, I don't know if you want to call it ruthless or more heavy-handed or whatever, but he knew what he had to do to keep power, and he did it. David would kind of throw around, well, should I do this, should I do that? It wasn't that way with Solomon. Solomon's prayer in chapter 3, he prays for wisdom. Verse 9 of 1 Kings chapter 3, so give thy servant understanding heart to judge thy people, to discern between good and evil, for who is able to judge this great people of thine? And he asked God for wisdom to make the right judgments as king. Verses 16 to 28, two prostitutes come to him for judgment. They both had a little baby, and one of them, the baby died in the middle of the night, so she exchanged, she accidentally slept on the baby, and the baby died, and they were sleeping in the same bed. So she put her dead baby under the other prostitute who was asleep, and took the live one, and in the morning was claiming that hers was the live one. And this prostitute went before the king and said, this is my baby, the live one is my baby, I want my baby back. So Solomon said, okay, give me a sword. They gave him a sword and said, give me the baby. And he's going to give the order to cut the baby in half and give half to one lady and half to the other lady. So the lady, who was only pretending to be the mother, said, good. Because she was thinking, if I can't have a live baby, then she can't have one. But the real mother started crying and said, no, king, give her the baby. And Solomon said, well, the one who is saying to spare the baby, give the baby to her, that's the real mother. What Solomon did was he recognized, he was wise enough to know that a real mother is going to love the baby so much that she'll give the baby away before she'll allow her baby to be put to death. And so people were amazed at the wisdom that young Solomon had. And it was what he got in answer to prayer from the Lord. Chapter 4 of 1 Kings, Solomon's wisdom is spoken about. Verse 20, Judah and Israel were as numerous as the sand that is on the seashore in abundance. They were eating and drinking and rejoicing. Now Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms from the river to the land of the Philistines and to the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. So now you've got there where it talks about the river. You're talking the Euphrates River, and you're talking way up here, way off on a map, and to the land of the Philistines. I mean, they are ruling one massive land, and to the border of Egypt. I mean, like Egypt is over here, so these guys are even ruling the Sinai Peninsula, where the Jews wandered through the wilderness. They have gotten a huge, huge chunk. Now, I don't think it's quite as big as the chunk that's going to be in the Millennial Kingdom. It might even be synonymous. They might be the same amount. I'd have to check on it. But Solomon, under David, with all the battles he won, and Solomon came in and was more a man of peace because he was just holding on to what David had already won, and he dealt more in diplomacy than anything else. But it was amazing how much land that they had. Verse 25 of that chapter. So Judah and Israel lived in safety, every man under his vine and his fig tree, from Dan to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. So they lived during a peaceful time. Very symbolic of the millennial reign of Christ. It was a time of peace. Here's a passage that that Kurt will like, verses 29 to 34. Now God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind, like the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the east. Probably from around the area of Persia. There was wise men from the east. And so his wisdom had surpassed all them and all the wisdom of Egypt. So Egypt had some things. Well, this is about 1000 B.C. This is, about 400 years before some philosophy is supposed to have started. These guys have been philosophers for years before that. Verse 31, for he was wiser than all men, than Ethan, the Ezrahite, Haman, Calco, and Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame was known in all the surrounding nations. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, that some of them are our proverbs today, and his songs were 1,005. Verse 33, and he spoke of trees from the cedar that is in Lebanon, even to the hyssop that grows on the wall. He spoke also of animals and birds and creeping things and fish. Not only was he into philosophy, he was a great scientist and a great biologist as well. And men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. And so Solomon's fame as a great thinker, a great philosopher, a great lover of wisdom was spreading, and he gained the reputation of being the wisest man alive. Solomon, remember David couldn't, God told David not to build the temple. He was a bloody man, a man of war. God wanted Solomon to build it, so now Solomon builds and dedicates the temple in chapters 5 to 8, and the temple is twice as large as the tabernacle was, the portable temple. The Lord appears to Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 9, verses 1 to 7. And the second time that he appeared to him, the first time he appeared to him was when he prayed for wisdom. And God is talking with him. And in verse 5, 1 Kings chapter 9, God says, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, just as I promised to your father David, saying, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. But if you or your son shall indeed turn away from following me, and shall not keep my commandments and my statutes which I have set before you, and shall go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land which I have given them, and the house which I have consecrated for my name, and I will cast out of my sight. So Israel will become a proverb and a byword among all peoples. And of course, Solomon did worship false gods, and the kingdom was divided, and eventually the Israelites were taken captive by Assyria, the Judah was taken captive eventually by Babylon. The Queen of Sheba visits Solomon. Look at verse 1 of chapter 10. Now when the Queen of Sheba, that's from the area of Africa, heard about the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with difficult questions. And then verses 6 to 9, she said in verse 6, it was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. She basically said that he exceeds in wisdom and in prosperity. It exceeds everything that she's ever heard. And that he did answer her questions. And that he is ruling in righteousness and justice. And then Solomon's idolatry is mentioned in 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 1. Starting in verse 1. Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh. Pharaoh he married as kind of a political to keep peace with Egypt. But there's also a Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite woman from the nations concerning which the Lord had said that the sons of Israel should not associate with them, neither shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away after their gods. Solomon held fast to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away. For it came about when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David his father had been. For Solomon, he went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the city, Sidonians, and after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites. And so it mentions on and on, and that is why the Israelites were not allowed to marry foreigners. It was not because God is prejudiced, but because they might lead them to worship false gods. There's nothing wrong with a Moabite woman becoming an Israelite by faith and then marrying an Israelite guy. But what he didn't want was the Israelites to marry a foreigner with her false religion, because then she's going to lead him astray later on. That's what happened with Solomon, and with that many wives, you can imagine the problems he had. Whether it's your heart like David, that is your strong point, or your mind like Solomon, that is your strong point, whether you're the wisest man or the most sensitive man to God's will, you're not immune from sin. Either way, you can fall. Verses 9 to 13. Now the Lord was angry with Solomon, chapter 11, because his heart was turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice, and had commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other gods. But he did not observe what the Lord had commanded. So the Lord said to Solomon, because you have done this, you have not kept my covenant and my statutes which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom from you, and I will give it to your servant. Nevertheless, I will not do it in your days for the sake of your father David, but I will tear it out of the hand of your son. However, I will not tear away all the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David, for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen. I believe he means one tribe besides Judah, which is already a tribe that he's from, that Solomon's from, so it's Judah and Benjamin. And then this does happen later on, which we're going to see. Verses 41 to 43, the death of Solomon. Now the rest of the acts of Solomon and whatever he did in his wisdom, are they not written in the book of the acts of Solomon? Thus the time that Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel was 40 years. And Solomon slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of his father David, and his son Rehoboam. This guy's a real loser. And his son Rehoboam resigned in his place, or reigned in his place. Didn't resign in his place, but reigned in his place. So now in Solomon dies, and now the divided kingdom is spoken about in chapters 12 to 16. The kingdom divides in chapter 12. And in verses 12 to 20, basically what happens is Jeroboam and all the people came to the king, and he said, look, Rehoboam, your father really taxed us to the max, really messed with us, give us, tax us less, give us more freedom, and everything will go all right. Well, the old advisors of Rehoboam said, hey, they're right. You don't have the wisdom or the power to keep these people following you if you make them upset. Give them what they want. But Rehoboam has some young buddies. And his young buddies, who were a little wet behind the ears, didn't know what they were talking about, basically said, hey, look, Rehoboam, you're the king. You tell them, you lay down the law, and they got to abide by it. So Rehoboam comes out and says, oh yeah, you think my dad was tough on you? Wait till you see me. I'm going to raise your taxes. I'm going to make you work harder. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. And so Jeroboam gathers up representatives from the 10 tribes, and they basically tell Rehoboam, take it easy, and what you have is he loses 10 tribes, and he does this with Judah and Israel. Judah and Benjamin, only those two tribes, they make up Judah. Their headquarters is Jerusalem, and Samaria becomes the capital of the northern tribes. There's a lot of young guys in the Clinton administration, that's for sure. And but the kingdom is divided. So Rehoboam, Solomon's son, ruled Judah, and Jeroboam ruled Israel, the 10 northern tribes. And so you'll find passages about Israel going to war with Judah and things like that. There's a prophecy of judgment against Jeroboam's line, and that was a messed up line in chapters 13 and 14. I don't even think there was even one godly king in the northern tribes. I don't think they ever had even one godly king the whole time. There were several godly ones, but they were in a minority of Judah, the southern tribes. But Jeroboam, what he decided to do, he made Samaria, made his own priest and stuff, and started his own, I think he even built a golden calf, and he started all kinds of false worship and stuff, just because he didn't want the people once a year to go to Jerusalem, because he thought that he would lose his hold over them if they did do that. And so a prophecy of judgment against his line occurred. Certain kings of Judah and kings of Israel are mentioned in chapters 15 to 16 due to lack of time, so we're just going to have to just pan right over that. Chapters 17 to 22, Elijah the prophet comes on the scene. He prophesies mainly to Israel in the north, and he predicts a three-year drought. And sure enough, the three-year drought does occur where it doesn't rain in the land. He raises the widow's son from the dead in chapter 17. He defeats the prophets of Baal, the false god, in chapter 18, a lot of idolatry. Here, look at verse 21 of 1 Kings chapter 18. Elijah came near to all the people and said, how long will you hesitate between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him, but if Baal, follow him. But the people did not answer him a word. They can't serve two masters. You've got to make your choice. You've got to serve one or the other. Verse 24. Elijah speaking to the prophets of Baal, and he says, but you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord, and the God who answers by fire, he is God. All the people answered and said, hey, that is a good idea. And so, They made their sacrifices, and they're waiting for fire to come from either their God or his God to ignite the sacrifices. Verses 38 to 40. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, the Lord, he is God, the Lord, he is God. Then Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal. did not let one of them escape, so they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. So he killed these hundreds of prophets, hundreds of false prophets, after God provides evidence that he is the true God by bringing the fire. It says, verse 45, so it came about in a little while that the sky grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a heavy shower, and King Ahab rode and went to Jezreel. So now the end of the 3 years without rain has ended, and now it begins to rain again. And Elijah also predicted that, by the way, and he told King Ahab that in verse 41. This is Ahab, king of Israel to the north. And chapter 19, after defeating these guys, look at verse 1. Now Ahab told Jezebel was his wife, the queen, all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and even more if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. Now Elijah's not going to be afraid that some woman, the queen, is just going to make a threat. He just killed 500 prophets, right? Well, verse 3, and he was afraid and arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belonged to Judah, and left his servants there. This chapter, it seems like Elijah's working all alone. Nobody's working with him. And I guess he's probably getting burnt out and everything. And then the queen says, puts a bounty out on him. And so he loses his courage, and then he goes and he starts praying that the Lord take his life. I don't want to live. Take my life. And God says, well, what's the matter? And he says, I'm the only one who still believes, and this and that. There's no other real believers, and I'm all alone. And Jezebel wants to have me killed, and no one's listening to me anyway. I just want to... And God never does give him advice. All he does is listen. And sometimes a good portion of Christian counseling is going to be listening. Listen, sometimes people just need to verbalize their problems that they're going through and need to know that somebody cares. A good counselor, you're not going to find out about people unless you listen. But there also comes a time when good, solid, biblical advice has to be delivered. Not Freudian advice, but good, solid, biblical advice. Here, God never did answer Elijah. So what's the matter, Elijah? Elijah's, oh, I'm the only one who believes, and this is going to kill me. I just want to die. Take me home. So God sends angels. They feed him for a few days. God shows him an earthquake, thunder, lightning. But then God speaks to him through a small, still, gentle breeze. So God's saying, I'm really not ticked off at you, Elijah. You're a hard worker. You just need a little bit of rest. You need to be fed. You need to be nourished. And God speaks to him through a small, still breeze. And then after Elijah gets this thing off his chest for the second or third time, instead of God giving him advice, God just ignores it and says, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to anoint this guy, the next king of such and such a place. And I want you to do it. God's going to say, no, God would say, okay, look, you had your pity party, you got it out of your system, you got some rest, I got you some food, I showed you I wasn't upset with you. Now I need you to do some more tasks. I want to put you to work again. But God also promises them, you're a hairy man, Elijah. I got a bald-headed nut named Elisha with an S-H. And you're not going to be alone anymore. It's going to be a lifelong companion. And the two of you are going to work together. And so he gets a buddy, and then the two of them, this hairy guy and this bald-headed guy, are these two crazy-looking prophets that go out there and... believe me, nobody wants to mess with them when you hear some of the things they accomplished. So in chapter 19, Elijah flees because he fears Ahab and Jezebel, the king and queen of Israel, but he is given Elisha as a colleague. Ahab and Jezebel have Naboth murdered to steal. The guy didn't want to give up his vineyard in chapter 21. And unlike Karl Marx and communism, the Bible teaches that the government is not supposed to confiscate private property. Property is the man can give the man over here. The government is there to serve man and protect his rights, not to take his rights from him. But Ahab and Jezebel, they have Naboth murdered and they steal his vineyard. And so Elijah predicts Ahab's death, and which does occur a little later on. Which is chapter 22, the king of Israel, King Ahab, is slain in battle against Syria. And Jehoshaphat then, also around this time, becomes king of Judah. His father had been a godly king. His name was Asa. And Jehoshaphat also was a godly king. But Ahaziah became the wicked king of Israel when his wicked, evil father Ahab died. So Jezebel was wicked, and her husband Ahab was wicked, and they had a baby, and he was wicked, and that guy got to rule next. That's the end of 1 Kings. Leads right into 2 Kings. The author also was possibly Jeremiah the prophet. 1 and 2 Kings were probably written between 646 to 560 B.C. 2 Kings 1 to 17 speak about the time period of 853 B.C. to 722 B.C. What it does is it takes you until 722 B.C., the Assyrian captivity of Israel, when the northern tribes are taken captive in 722 B.C. And then 2 Kings 18 to 25 take you from 715 to 560 B.C., approximately. It takes you a little bit beyond 586 B.C. when the Babylonians took Judah captive. Okay? When you look at 1 and 2 Kings together, you see that pretty much all 19 kings of Israel to the north were evil. Okay? But 8 of the 20 kings of Judah were godly and made reforms and knocked down altars to false gods, stuff like that. Outline of this chapter is a little bit more, this book, 2 Kings, is a little bit more in depth here. First you have the close of Elijah's ministry, chapters 1 and 2. Close of Elijah's ministry in chapters 1 and 2. You have the miracles of Elisha, or Elisha, his, in chapters 3 to 6. The buddy of Elijah, who kept on going after Elijah died. You have Jehu becoming the king of Israel in chapter 9. And obviously we're skipping some chapters here. Again, in an overview, we can't cover everything. But Jehu becomes the king of Israel. In chapter 9, a little bit mentioned about him. The reign of King Joash is mentioned in chapters 12 and 13. He ruled over Judah. Those chapters, several things are mentioned about him. Elisha dies in chapter 13. Elisha dies in chapter 13. Chapter 17 is Assyria takes Israel captive. And then you have Judah's history after the Assyrian captivity of Israel, which runs until they're taken captive by Babylon in chapters 18 to 25. So let's take a look at that. We're not going to be able to get too far in depth. Well, we might be able to. We just won't cover it in heavy detail, but maybe we'll try to knock off as much as possible. Close of Elijah's ministry, chapters 1 and 2. In chapter 1, Elijah predicts King Ahaziah's death, and Ahaziah is the king of Israel, and he does die. That's predicted. That Elijah is taken up into heaven in verses 9-11. Remember, he was praying for God to take him home, for God to allow him to die. Well, that prayer still hasn't been answered. Elijah never did die. God took him up to heaven in a fiery chariot. But that's chapter 2, verses 9-11 over there. Elisha asked him, though, he said, hey, you know, give me a double portion of your spirit. Have God give me a double portion of your spirit. So he prays, and sure enough, Elisha receives a double portion of the power that Elijah ministered in, and you can see that from some of the miracles that he performed in verses, chapters 3 to 6. In fact, even at the end of chapter 2, everybody started, they had heard that Elijah had been taken up into heaven, so they started making fun of Elisha. And so what they told him, they said, they started yelling, go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head. I guess they were with these 42 lads, they're basically teenagers, and yeah, they say, go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head, it's verse 23 of 2 Kings chapter 2, but they're making fun of him because he's bald, plus they're telling him, let's see you go up in the sky like supposedly your fellow prophet did. And, you know, you start messing with God's mighty prophets, and you got to watch out. Verse 24 of 2 Kings chapter 2, when he looked behind him and saw them, he cursed them in the name of the Lord. Then two female bears came out of the woods and tore up 42 lads of their number. So think twice before you start locking horns with a true man of God, with a man who's been called to proclaim God's message to the masses. The miracles of Elisha, not Elijah, but Elisha with the S-H, he multiplied the widow's oil. He raised the Shunammite woman's son from the dead. He multiplied bread to feed 100 men. He healed Naaman of leprosy. He had leprosy and he healed him. He caused an axe head to float. And he blinded the Syrian army. That's chapter 6. Take a look at chapter 6, 2 Kings chapter 6. And verses 15 to 23. Now when the attendant of the man of God had risen early and gone out, behold, an army with horses and chariots circling the city, and a servant said to him, alas, my master, what shall we do? So he answered, do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. So he's saying God's got more in his army than they've got in theirs. Now the servant is freaking out. So then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So he enabled him to see God's angelic armies that were protecting Elisha. And when they came down to him, Elisha prayed the Lord and said, strike this people with blindness, I pray. So he struck them with blindness, according to the word of Elisha. Then Elisha said to them, this is not the way, nor this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek. And he brought them to Samaria. Verse 20, it came about when they had come into Samaria that Elisha said, O Lord, open the eyes of these men that they may see. And the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. Then the king of Israel, now Samaria, the capital of Israel, when he saw them, said to Elisha, my father, what shall I kill them? Shall I kill them? And he answered, you shall not kill them. Would you kill those who had been taken captive with your sword and with your bow? Set bread and water before them that they may eat and drink and go to their master. So he prepared a great feast for them, and when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away, and they went to their master. And the marauding bands of Arameans did not come again into the land of Israel. That must have been very intimidating to go in there to attack, to be made blind at the command of a prophet, and then to be sent back to report to your king what happened. Jehu becomes king, the king of Israel, in chapter 9. Jehu executes all of Ahab's line. Remember the evil king of Israel, Ahab's line, and he stopped Baal worship. Still, Jehu himself was messed up as well, and he messed up in several areas and could not be classified overall as a good king. There was no good king of Israel. The reign of King Joash of Judah is mentioned in chapters 12 and 13. Now, a lady named Athaliah Athaliah, she's pretty important. She murdered all of David's line except Joash. He was just a little baby. Okay? She murdered the whole line. If she had murdered Joash, Jesus would have never been born. So she murdered all of the line, but she didn't get to Joash. She wasn't able to get to him. And so Athaliah makes herself the queen over Judah and reigns for 6 years, but then she's put to death when the high priest Jehoiada recognized that the Davidic throne needs to be established. He has her put to death, and Joash begins to reign at age 7. Now obviously Jehoiada, the high priest, is really calling the shots because he's only 7 years old, but Jehoiada the priest is a godly man. And so Joash repairs the temple and reigns for 40 years over Israel. And but Israel starts taking a nosedive, I believe, after Jehoiada the priest dies. And but he's assassinated. Joash is assassinated in chapter 12, verses 17 to 21. Then Elisha dies in chapter 13, verses 20 to 21, 2 Kings 13. Verses 20 to 21, Elisha died and they buried him. Now the bands of the Moabites would invade the land in the spring of the year. And as they were burying a man, behold, they saw a marauding band, and they cast the man into the grave of Elisha. When the man touched the bones of Elisha, he revived and stood up on his feet. So even the bones of Elisha, God was still working through even the bones of Elisha to raise a guy from the dead, even after Elisha himself was dead. So Elijah died there in chapter 13, and then Israel was taken captive by the Assyrians in 722 BC. That's chapter 17. We'll pick it up there in the next lecture.